Hello there, and welcome to Gilded in Blood, the Horror Lit Podcast. My name is Kevin, and today we have another Short Shock episode for you. We are going to be talking about a classic ghost story, maybe the ghost story. When it all comes down to it, there may not be a more famous ghost story, especially a ghost story writer, than M.R. James, and the story we're talking about today is "O Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad." Now, I have this collected in what I cannot stress enough you should go out and get. It's called The Big Book of Ghost Stories, and it purports to be the largest collection of ghost stories ever produced. And it is. It's chock full of absolutely wonderful ghost stories. Basically, can't recommend it enough. But one of the shining jewels, obviously, and this short story appears in so many different places. I'm pretty sure you can just go online and read it, which I definitely recommend you do. But it really is the shining jewel in this one. Now, before we actually get to the story itself, I do want to talk a tiny bit about M.R. James. And usually on these Short Shock episodes, we don't really go a ton into the author, and I'm not going to go into his life or anything like that. But being that he was one of the preeminent creators of ghost stories, it behooves us to talk a little bit about him and what he gave to the genre of that specific type of story, because he did. He basically created a template for how to do this the really right way. And he actually established some rules for ghost stories that are still followed today, and that actually leads to the term Jamesian ghost stories. So I want to go over a few of these rules. There's five of them, and I looked everywhere to try to find a good way for all of these to be kind of concisely listed, and the best one that I found was actually not a website, but another podcast. So I do want to give a shout out to this podcast. I've been listening to them for years. I absolutely adore them. It's one of my favorite podcasts, and you need to go listen to this podcast. It's a great podcast. Podcast is called Overdue, and their conceit is that they are talking about books that you should have read by now. It's a wonderful podcast. Those two guys are so good, but they actually covered some M.R. James kind of tangentially. They didn't really cover this specific short story, but they did a couple of episodes where they talked about ghost stories and urban legends, and they talked about the fact that M.R. James kind of created some rules for those. So I'm going to steal those from the guys Overdue. Again, I don't think they'll ever hear this, but if they ever do, all credit goes to you guys. You guys did the research for it. I'm just stealing it, but I love you for it. Thank you so much. So the first rule that he has is the pretense of truth, the idea that the story that you're reading has to appear true or real in some way. Otherwise, it's really not going to scare you. Two is a pleasing terror, kind of that chill that you get up your spine when you're watching a good horror movie or you're reading a good horror book, that sense that there's a specific feel that everybody who reads horror is trying to get to. And M.R. James says, you know, with a ghost story, you have to kind of, that's your goal. You have to try to hit that mark. Interestingly enough, Edgar Allan Poe was really big into that. He said that the emotion that you're trying to create is, it supersedes plot. It doesn't matter if you have a good plot or not. You have to get to that emotion. You have to get to that feeling of that pleasant terror. Okay. Three, no gratuitous bloodshed or sex. He was all about the understated. It's not the grotesquery. It's not the body horror. It's not people being ripped limb from limb. It is terror rather than horror. And those are two very distinct things. One is much more intellectual. One is much more insular. And one is much more external and focused on what god-awful things can happen to the human body. That's not really what he's wanting to talk about. He wants to talk about the internal stuff, the stuff that breaks down the mind. That's where he wants to live. Four is no explanation of the machinery. He doesn't want explanation of why this is or how this ghost is walking around. That kills the story. The story is about a person experiencing this, not a person researching this. So the point of the story is not to explain it. The point of the story is to experience it. And that's what specifically the story does very, very well. And finally, number five, the story should be of a familiar time to the reader. Of course, this one is not going to exactly hit that way for readers of today. This was written some time ago, I believe over 100 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. But his point is valid. It's easier to distance yourself from a book that you're reading or a movie that you're watching that doesn't happen in your day. It becomes easier to say, oh, that's happening to somebody else. Whereas if it's happening in your day and time, it is very easy to imagine yourself in that specific scenario or that specific situation, which of course makes it all the creepier. So that being said, this one is still creepy. I think people who really read a lot, people who kind of invest themselves in literature and storytelling, I think we're better at maybe not having to worry about that. We're better at putting ourselves in the shoes of people, even if they are not specifically us, today's date and today's time and things of that nature. I think we're better. We readers, we wonderful readers, we're better at kind of putting ourselves in the shoes of others. So I think it's going to come off just as well for you. So let's talk about this wonderful short story. Again, with these short shocks, I really do suggest that you go try to find the story and read it first before we talk about it so that you can kind of experience it, go in blind. But again, I kind of leave that up to you. But let's go ahead and talk about it. So we begin with our main character, who is Professor Parkins, and he is going on holiday to Burnstow, this coastside town in Britain. Now, Parkins is shown immediately as kind of the prototypical fusty professor. He is someone who loudly condemns belief in any sort of supernatural phenomena. He derides it. He has no time for people who believe in such foolishness or nonsense. Now, that is going to be very important as we go on in the story, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but just a tiny little spoiler, it is going to lead to him being more susceptible to something bad happening to him of a supernatural nature. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit, but know that he starts the story off. Basically, first thing you know about him is he has no time for this nonsense, which of course, if you've read stories like this or you watch movies like this, you know, that belief is going to be challenged somehow. So this story is excellent at building this sense of place and atmosphere. It begins with kind of his conversation, kind of almost I think it's the breakfast table with some colleagues, and they're talking about things of a supernatural nature, where he's going and so on and so forth. But once he actually gets to Burnstow, it's amazing how well James is able to kind of build this atmosphere, this kind of lonely, kind of melancholy, almost creepy atmosphere of this seaside resort that he's staying. It's not glamorous. It's not bikini clad women walking on the beach. It's kind of cold. It's overcast. It's windy. It's creepy. He creates this wonderful, wonderful sense of place. Now, before Parkins goes there, a colleague asks him to look in on an ancient ruin said to be near his hotel. And Parkins, when he actually gets to the hotel and is walking around looking for that, he literally stumbles over it as he walks home one evening along the beach. He trips over these piles of rock that is the ruins of, I believe he finally finds that is either a church or some sort of temple that was around thousands, possibly years ago. Now, while he's examining this room, because he said he would for his colleague, Parkins finds a whistle. And it's said in the story to be of some considerable age. Now, the second he picks up the whistle and decides, well, I'm going to take this home and, you know, maybe a little bit of a memento for my colleague, the second he picks it up, things start to change in the story. The haunting, if you want to call it that, begins at that moment, the second that he picks up that whistle. And he sees as he's walking home, there's someone following him. Way, way down the beach to the point where he's basically just a tiny little silhouette. But what Parkins is able to see is that it appears that this figure is running at him, but not seeming to gain any distance. There's this sense of movement forward, this frantic movement forward, but doesn't seem to be actually closing the distance between them in any way. And it's terribly, terribly unsettling. It really is. It's easy when you're reading this short story to imagine yourself. You're out on this lonely beach. You're the only person there, and you look behind, and there is somebody who looks to be running after you or running at you. But the unreality of them not actually closing the distance makes it so much more creepy. It really is. And Parkins actually starts imagining what he would do if he looked back and saw that the figure had wings and a tail like a demon. And it's just, it's so creepy. I'm sitting here. It's afternoon on a Sunday afternoon. The sun is out and I'm getting goosebumps. And I know that's stupid. I know it's goofy, but I also absolutely freaking love it. It's so good. And that's what this story is very, very adept at doing. It creeps you out just by the things that are going on in his mind, because we've all been there. We've all been in a situation with that's maybe a little bit eerie, maybe a little bit creepy, walking through some woods or some such other. And of course, our stupid imagination is like, oh, well, if you think that's creepy, what would happen if somebody stepped out in front of you from a tree? So our minds do that. And M.R. James really does portray Parkins as kind of an everyman in that, you know, people do that. Their imaginations kind of run away with themselves. And it does lead to things being very creepy and very, very unsettling. So later on inside, he's gotten home with this whistle and he starts to clean the whistle. And as he looks out his window at the seaside, he has a wonderful room that looks out on the seaside. He sees a figure stationed on the shoreline watching him. And I understand that most people reading this story would probably think of the same thing at this point, because I know I did. I thought, grab my bags, grab my stuff, get out of there. I understand. I know I would be screaming at this guy, get out of there. What is wrong with you? There's people just standing on the beach looking at you. Run as fast as you can. Of course, we wouldn't have a story. So of course he doesn't. Now let's focus in on this whistle, because as he starts to clean it, he starts to see that there are things engraved on this old whistle. There's an inscription on the whistle. There are four sets of three letters, FLA, FUR, FLE, and BIS. So FLA, FUR, FLE, and BIS. Now, I will freely admit that I did not just come up with this on my own. I had to go do a little bit of research. But what I found was, if you put bis at the end of each of those, you get flabis, furbis, phlebis, which are Latin. And they translate to, you will blow, as in a whistle, you will go mad, and you will weep. Okay, so you will blow, you will go mad, and you will weep. Now, that alone, right there, that's enough reason for anybody to just, okay, I'm going to leave this whistle here. I'm going to leave the hotel. I may or may not strike a match and try to burn it down. And I'm going home. I never want to have anything to do with this ever, ever, ever again. But it is specifically noted in the story that he does not know what to do with this inscription. He does not put that together. That is something external to us. A reader can put that together. He does not. So he misses the warning. And that right there is one of the best elements of this story. There's a warning right there. This is, do not blow this whistle. You will lose your mind and you will weep. You will literally go crazy. But he misses that. He doesn't put that together. Now, on the other side is a little bit more Latin. That is, quis est iste qui venit, or who is this who is coming? So being a professor, he does know his Latin, so he does translate that, and that one seems a little less ominous, I would suspect, rather than you will blow, you will go mad, and you will weep. This one is, oh, who's coming? So, of course, you knew this was going to happen. Parkins blows the whistle, and instantly, the second he does, things cloud over him in his mind, and he sees a picture in his mind of a dark landscape, this Clark Ashton Smith-esque kind of desolate landscape with a solitary figure on it. And as he's sitting there in his room, the wind blows into his room and extinguishes the candles. So again, readers of horror are probably like, oh, well, this is really, really the time to skedaddle and get the hell out of there. But at this point, he can't. I mean, he's stuck at this point. He has invited this curse down upon him. So whatever he does, he's in it for the long haul, whether he knows it or not. Though we probably have figured that out. Now, I spoke earlier about the fact that Parkins is particularly vulnerable to the effects of this supernatural presence precisely because he doesn't believe in it. Now, I would suspect that you are very, very much like me, and probably most people would never, ever blow that whistle. I mean, you find a whistle of some considerable age in ancient ruins on a creepy beach. What is the first thing you're going to do? Are you going to blow it? Because if you are, I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to know you because you are going to invite so many curses down upon you. I would take that and I would flip it into the damn ocean as fast as I possibly could. But he does not believe in this nonsense. He doesn't believe in supernatural aspects. He believes that the only bad thing that can happen if I blow this whistle is that, I mean, my lips are touching something that is dirty. That's kind of weird. Okay, I'll grant you that. But there's nothing beyond that for him. So he is particularly vulnerable to the supernatural precisely because he doesn't believe in it. And he's more susceptible to losing his mind when confronted with the supernatural because he has not prepared his mind for the possibility of its existence. So the people who go mad when they see something that doesn't conform to the reality of their world, those are the people who are staunchly against believing in the concept that there is something that can change a worldview. Somebody who is a believer of ghosts or monsters or things of that nature, when they see one, there's an element of fear of it. Yeah, absolutely. But there's also a tiny element of validation. I kind of knew that there was always something weird about this. But people who have staunchly defended their minds against even the possibility of something other than everything that we know about, that is a person who is ripe for being broken completely when confronted with it. So Parkins is kind of the perfect candidate for insanity in this situation. So from now on, after blowing this whistle, Parkins starts to kind of go downhill a tiny bit. He has this waking nightmare. Every single time he closes his eyes, he sees a scene on the beach, almost like he's a third person observer. He's watching it. But what he's watching is this terrified man running from this indistinct shrouded figure that moves in this random upsetting way. It's not like one person chasing another. It's these jerks and these slides. And then all of a sudden he rushes forward and then he's slowly kind of to the side and then rushes forward again. So it's this creepy sort of style of movement that is getting closer and closer to this person who's trying to flee this figure. And just before the figure jumps forward and overtakes the man, Parkins has to open his eyes. He tries multiple times. The story says he tries multiple times to keep his eyes closed so he can see how the scene ends, what would actually happen. And every single time it happens, he's just too filled with dread and fear, and he has to open his eyes. It's almost an involuntary action. Now, aside from this, there are continual hints that something is in the room with him. It's noted that he has rented out a room that has two beds. Of course, he takes one, and then the other one he leaves alone. But as he's sleeping, after he finds the whistle and after he stupidly blows it, he notes that there is like the sound of scurrying when he lights a match to light the candle. And of course he chalks that up to rats. There's a rustling in a bed of what he thinks is probably the neighbor in the other room. So there's all of these signs that something may be in the room with him. There's even a scene where the maid notes that the other bed in his room looks slept in and has to be remade. So she's asking, well, was the other bed not good? You had to move to the other bed. He was like, what are you talking about? I never even set anything on that other bed. And she was like, oh, well, it looks like it slept in, but I've remade it. So obviously there's something sinister going on here. Now, one of the clever things that James does here is he has a little bit of external verification that something else is going on. There is a scene where Parkins runs into a boy who notes that, oh, I was waving at a figure up in that window over there. And Parkins looks up, and of course, it's his room. So we see somebody external seeing the apparition, and that lets the reader know that this is not all in Parkins's head. This is not just his thing. It is a concrete reality for people around him as well, which makes it a little bit more threatening, a little bit creepier. And the figure that waved to the boy was doing it from Parkins' window. We saw that. And the boy says it was wrong. That's the word he used. It's wrong. And of course, the spare bed in his room becomes disturbed again. So it's not just that there's just another person there. It's something that disturbs the other people who encounter it as well. Now, as Parkins is here at the hotel, he befriends somebody who's known as the Colonel. And he is kind of the voice of reason here, but only if one isn't hamstrung by logic and trust in a non-supernatural world. The Colonel seems to be a very together person. He doesn't necessarily believe that there's anything supernatural going on, but he is at least open to the concept of it in a way that Parkins is not. So the Colonel becomes kind of his foil for this situation. So most of us would follow his advice because the Colonel tells Parkins, you need to get rid of that whistle. That whistle is nothing that you should have in your possession at all. But Parkins, of course, ignores him. Now, we come to kind of the climax of the story at the very end. Parkins is in his bed sleeping. The moonlight is coming through. And what else do we see but a figure sits up in the spare bed, defined by the bedsheet. So like a literal bedsheet ghost. But whatever is under here, whatever is manifesting this bedsheet, it's a nice touch that Parkins is fundamentally averse to touching it. He cannot bring himself to touch it. It crosses his mind, I should take that and just whip it off and see what's there. And he is physically unable to touch that sheet. And the sheet crumples at its face into the suggestion of like eyes and a nose and a mouth. And it literally drives Parkins temporarily insane. He's found crying, sitting on his bed and crying and moaning and pointing to the other bed. So the story provides two counterparts in Parkins and the Colonel. And the Colonel is actually the one who comes in and saves Parkins from being attacked and possibly driven irreparably insane by the figure. But it's interesting that James kind of gives us these two fundamental people who we've probably interacted with in our lives. One who is staunchly against anything supernatural. Just nothing like that has ever existed. No way, no how. And other people who are maybe a little bit more careful about saying, well, I am not so egotistical to think that we have everything figured out. There's other things going on, some of which I cannot quite understand. So I'm going to keep my mind open. So that's where the story is. Colonel saves Parkins, and finally the story notes that Parkins may have had his views changed a tiny bit moving forward in his life, seeing that he literally almost was destroyed by an encounter with a supernatural being. It is one of the best ghost stories of all time. It's so creepy. It's so wonderfully fun and interesting, and the atmosphere is wonderful. You need to break this story out and read it on a cold, rainy fall night. And we've probably got some coming up because October is upon us. October is coming up, and those of you who are regular listeners, I may have some extra bonus material coming up here in the future. I love October. Autumn is my favorite time of the year, obviously, and it will surprise absolutely nobody to hear that Halloween is my absolute favorite holiday of the year. So October is my jam. I love October. So in that respect, I think I may start putting out a little bit of extra bonus content on Mondays throughout October, because Halloween is on the last Monday of October. I think we might have some extra bonus material coming out in October. So I want you to keep your eyes open for that. Keep your ears open for that and check your feed a little bit early. Obviously we're still going to have our Tuesday episodes, our short shocks, our regular books, but on Mondays throughout October, check and see. you might like what you find. Okay. So we'll leave that until we get to the wonderful, pumpkin month itself, which is very, very close now. So, but for today, that's all I've got for you. I hope that you will go check out the story, "A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad," by M.R. James. Next week, we have a Modern Monstrosities episode, and that is going to be Keelan Patrick Burke's Sour Candy. And then our next Short Shock episode, 2 weeks from today, is going to be by Clive Barker, one of the masters of horror, and we're going to read one of his best short stories, Dread, an aptly titled short story. Thank you again to Swarm for the use of his music. You can find this podcast, as always, at gildedandblood.buzzsprout.com or any of the platforms that you find your podcasts. And until next time, stay safe and stay spooked.